All right, friends. All right. You got it? Okay. Well, I hope you had a good time to take a break and to get a snack. We're going to get back together, so if you don't mind taking a seat, we'll jump back into our next session. This is always my favorite part of CPLF, is getting you back in your seats. So, hey, why don't we pray before we jump in? We're not going to pray. I just learned that from Ed. Good way to break back in. So, this is a part of why CPLF is a fellowship, because you really get a chance between the breaks to talk, catch up, chat, minister to one another. So I want to encourage you to continue to do that, and we're going to, during our dinner time, you'll have a chance to catch up and really have good conversations around the content, but also just what God's doing in your network and organization in general. So I'm going to bring up Danae in just a second here, but I just want to thank again, Patrick, being a Chicago guy and being around the Chicago Catalysts, I can really attest to the things that Patrick had to say. So thanks again, Patrick, for sharing that. Danae Pierre, she's the director of the Surge Network, Danae, I've been glad that we've had a chance to kind of get to know each other. Yeah, Ed said something a while back about he only follows a few people on social media, which is kind of funny because Ed is Mr. Social Media, and he listed off a couple of people, and for me, I feel like I'm the same way. There's a few people that I really follow on social media, and you have been really, for the last year and a half for me, really influential. So I'm really glad that you're here today. Danae, she oversees and she directs the Surge Network, but also her and her husband, Vermone, they have planted and lead a church called Roosevelt Community Church out of Phoenix, Arizona. And Danae also sits on the board of the North American Leadership Team for City to City Redeemer, and she has influence over their strategies and what they're trying to do here in North America. And so she's going to talk to us about collaboration, specifically what they're seeing outside or inside of Phoenix. It's such an interesting network that they've developed with Surge, because they just aren't a church planting network. But really, earlier when Patrick said ecosystem, from what I observed with Surge Network, they're attempting to be an ecosystem. So they also house a missional training seminary. I guess that's also a part of what you all do with Dr. Michael Goheen. So maybe if there's a chance, you can share a little bit about that as well. But I'd love for us to welcome Danae as she comes up here to share with us. So.
All right. Great to be with you guys. I always love when I get to come somewhere and bring a jacket. It very rarely comes out of my closet in Phoenix. I'm just going to start by telling you a little bit about the story of Surge and how we came to be, and give you a little bit of our history. So we started, my husband and I planted Roosevelt 15 years ago in downtown Phoenix, so we're right in the center of the city. And at that point, the city was kind of half empty. So it was kind of more of an inner city feel. In the last 15 years, it's just rapidly changed. The city's come in and built a light rail, and they did all kinds of development. Our Arizona State University opened up a campus downtown. And so in that first 5 years of planting, we really went there to reach a particular part of our city that was kind of on the margins, and then faced this rapid transition of gentrification and learned so much in that process. Our heart was to be a multi-ethnic church. Reconciliation was a big part and is a big part of what brings us together as a church family and part of our witness in downtown Phoenix. And as we were planting, we just kind of began to notice other church plants throughout the city pop up. And so we got connected to several other church planters at that time. There was about four or five churches a little over a decade ago, maybe 11 years ago, that kind of casually knew each other and began to say, let's get together at tables like this for lunch, and let's kind of bring in some older pastors, hear their war stories, learn from them, try to, have some encouragement to the work that we're doing. So those pastors began meeting. Our church and about five other churches were part of it at that point. And we would drive out. There was an older pastor in the East Valley part of our city that had planted out of his church three or four of those church plants. They had this connection to each other. And it really just began very relationally. As church planters, we were, you know, in these conversations 10 years ago, we were saying, you know, help, you know, we want to be church planting churches. We want to be church plants that plant more churches. And we began gathering and pretty quickly said, okay, what can we do together? We would go to these national conferences or whatever our affiliation was. At that point, we had a pretty common theological tradition. And we'd go to these national things and we'd come back and say, but what does this look like to do in Phoenix? And what if we really just focused our energy and our church planting efforts here in this city? What could happen? And so the first thing that we did was we developed some leadership development training for our congregations, and we'll talk a little bit about that when I talk about how we build capacity for church planting. Eventually we developed, initially it was a unaccredited training program for pastors. So in Phoenix, we didn't have a lot of seminary education right there in the city. People would leave or people would parachute in, and we thought, if we're going to really equip leaders and church planters and pastors long term, it would be great to have a really robust seminary program here. So now we have a fully accredited master's program, Justice and Mercy and Faith and Work and blah, 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 all these other things over time began to get added, but really by these churches, these pastors really saying, how do we partner together for the greatest impact in our city? So we say now, 10 years into being a network, being the Surge Network, that we are a movement of local churches that want to put Jesus on display in Arizona. And we want to do that through equipping, reconciling, and activating the city church. So there's this aspect of equipping. We want churches to be gospel-centered and missional. And as we've pressed in on that, it's allowed us to work very broadly denominationally. So we have Assemblies of God and Presbyterian and actually a lot of the groups, you know, Lutheran and Nazarene and Mennonite Brethren. And there's just a lot of churches that when you put Jesus and mission at the center, and you confine yourself to a region that can begin to come together and do a lot of great things together. Reconciling. We really believe, you know, we talk about collaboration a lot. That word is used all the time. I think it's a big longing for any Jesus follower. You know, I think if we talk in a room about the unity of the church, for the most part, all of our denominations have those people, you know, that are always talking about church unity and prayer and how do we come together. I just think it's something the Spirit of God does in his people is put this burden and longing to be whole, to be one. And that doesn't just happen. It really is a product of the work and the ministry of reconciliation. And the first half of that is learning to be a confessing people, to be able to look at our historic sins and the ways in which we have been divided for so long from each other, even just from the beginning of our nation. And how do we, as leaders, as pastors, as church leaders, learn how to practice the ministry of reconciliation? So a lot of the work that we do within our city is we'll help create training environments to strengthen those muscles. You know, we'll use the example, if you go to a gym and you work with a personal trainer, you know, they're going to, over time, you might begin to have definition to a muscle you didn't know existed. And we really believe in the American church, I'll say, right now, doesn't have that muscle of confession developed. And without developing that spiritual muscle, collaboration is really impossible. We can gather people for a season, but if any of you have tried it, it's very difficult, and it requires consistent work together. And then lastly, we say activating the city church. So when we think about Jesus being put on display in our city, we think about that in two different ways. One is all of our local churches on a map. So we've got about 100 congregations that are working together. There's 44 churches that are invested in the leadership, funding. They're providing anywhere from 5 to 20 hours a week of their pastoral team to our surge team. So we're not a parachurch. We're this collaboration of those 40 churches. And then hundreds of pastors benefit from the collective work of all those churches and all those pastors. So we see that as an aspect of putting Jesus on display in our city. When things happen at this point, 10 years in this city, we're one of the surge or one of our churches who quickly mobilizes the rest of surge is called by our city leaders, by our government leaders. This last year was as the asylum seekers were flooding through Central America and Mexico, our governor and the immigration department called us and said, we need help. Like we have thousands and thousands of people. We have no place to put them. And schools and foster care and on, this is a fruit that only God can do, and God has done it through the collective work of so many of these pastors and church leaders. I could spend the whole time telling stories about how God is glorified through that. The other way is through God's people being deployed for mission in our city. So if you picture Sunday morning, people coming out of the church, really being equipped to live out and preach the gospel in all areas of their life. And so those are the things that bring us together. There is a lot of differences, different neighborhoods in our city, different philosophies of ministry, different theology. I tell our pastors I'm all things to all pastors so that some might be saved. but you know, our pastors can gather, and you pick a topic theologically, and we could be here till midnight, right? But that's not what we do when we gather. There is deep convictions for the tribes we come from, the traditions we come from, but we're part of the family of God, and that's one tribe. And so that's been a big part of our story. And even as I've gotten a chance to tell a little bit about it, It's always one of those things that it's hard. And any of you who are part of even denominational work, and you get to celebrate and see all the good things that God is doing, there's always a sense that it's really fragile as well, because it really is built on relationship. And so even as you see the Lord working, there's all these ways in which we know that there's just great need for so much more. So it's humbling to be able to share a little bit with you guys what we do to build capacity for church planting and church planters in our network. But I'm looking at this room and I see Chad over there, and I just know there's so much for us to learn in Phoenix. And we've been really on the receiving end of just the gifts of the body of Christ helping to strengthen us and encourage us. And so as I share, I echo the speaker before me that this is really God's work. And so I'm going to just give you guys maybe 5 different snapshots of how we have built capacity for church planting in Phoenix. It wasn't actually a strategy. When we started as church planters, and we started a network that was focused on the ecosystem. And actually, there was not an intentionality. We wanted to plant churches from our local churches, but our intentionality was not to be a church planting network. However, over the last 5 years especially, we've probably tripled our capacity for church planting. And so as we've been evaluating and just praying, and as a team really looking at what are some of the key reasons why we're seeing this really take hold of our churches, and we're seeing more church planting happening in our city, I've really boiled it down to these values or principles that really hold our network together, more so than a strategy, because we probably have tried every strategy out there, and some of them have worked, and some of them have failed miserably. And as you guys know, some things work for one plant that definitely will not work for another plant. But these really seem to be the things that we keep coming back to, and that, at least in this season, are working. And so, let's see. Oh, all right. So the first kind of key when we talked within our city, within Phoenix, about how do we build capacity among our pastors and church planters and leaders, is we keep coming back to this principle that relationship is everything. It's not a means to an end. And it really is the end. So, and we're happening to discover church planters along the way. So we're not out looking for planters and then discover friends along the way. We are making friends and building relationships and helping our denominational leaders within our city develop these deep relationships, and they're not transactional. It's not, if this person doesn't fit my network, let me move on to the next because my time is limited. You know, we always tell our pastors, actually, like, God, we live in eternity. Time's not limited. And our relationships need to be treated as such. And so this has been something that I think we stumbled upon. It wasn't an overt, intentional value that we would communicate over and over again, but it's become something that's really meaningful to our leaders within Surge, to our pastors and churches. Our planters and we're relentlessly committed to our planters, and then we come alongside them in two ways, and that's to build their capacity for Jesus and for people. So a lot of the church planting conversations that we kept bumping into kind of miss this really important piece, not intentionally, right? Like, I think we all imagine we're getting it from a well somewhere else, or we're pulling it from our own denominations or maybe our sending church. But we can sometimes think about people's capacity for leadership and their capacity for preaching or church planting or how entrepreneurial they are, all the while missing what does it mean to have an assessment, to discern with our planters what their capacity for Jesus and for people are. Because that will determine when and how and what kind of church and what kind of funding model and what type of network to connect them to for church planting. One of the things we've noticed is that there is this danger of, that I would say consistently over the last 10 years that we've bumped up against, of sizing up and valuing leaders based on our own assessment of their potential, of their giftedness, of their strengths. We talked and we've repented multiple times of seasons where we've watched as certain leaders are neglected and because they're perceived of having less impact, while other leaders perceived to have more impact are given maybe shorter runways and more fuel. And we've seen the consequences of that. I mean, I think across the U.S., but for sure in our city, on people's marriages and families and mental health. One of the things when we think about how are we investing in building the capacity within Surge for church planting is just starting with the reality that everyone's in a different place. So I'm a mother of four kids. We've got a 5, 9, 15, and 18-year-old. And I am equally a mother to all four of them, and they all need development. But some of them have different capacities for reproducing, hopefully, right? My 18-year-old, likely in the next 10 years, will give me a grandchild. Kind of scary. My 5-year-old, I hope, it's decades from now, right? That's not a different level of care or love or compassion or investment. And a lot of times when we're thinking with our kind of leadership hat on of like what's the most amount of churches we can plant in the shortest amount of time and who are the leaders that we can oversee, we forget that we need to be investing in some people that are going to take 20 years to plant a church, and some congregations and some neighborhoods that are going to take 3 decades to reproduce. And others can do it in a couple years, and that's okay. And I think we have to be able to have more of a that kind of mindset when we're assessing. One of the things we lead, our team meets every Monday morning. We got from our different churches, our kind of core Surge leadership. And one of our consistent prayers is that the Lord would not give us more planters or pastors than we have capacity to steward well. And if he's going to be so gracious to increase the planters and churches, which he continually seems to do, would he also increase our capacity to serve and love them? And it's not to mean that it's always necessarily comfortable or that we're like, feel like, you know, that we feel like we're serving them well in all areas, but the sense that, you know, a lot of times we're grasping for more and we're not caring well for what we have. And so how do we really think about caring well for the leaders and planters that God's given us? One of the things that happens because we have so many churches working cross-denominationally is we get a lot of times to serve a local church when the denominational leader doesn't live in Phoenix. So a denominational leader might, you know, call me and say, hey, we've got this planter who's coming to Phoenix. They get plugged in to our Phoenix ecosystem, and then we're able to collaborate with them while this church is getting birthed. We had a pastor who, you know, 8 people in his living room. That quickly grew to maybe 50 or 60. Within a year, he had over 100, tons of baptisms, really great things happening. And a denomination came alongside and recruited him and said, hey, like, we'll give you funding, we'll support you. And so within 2 or 3 years, maybe by the a little over the second year, he had funding. He was kind of a spokesperson for his denominational region, trying to recruit more planters. He was an all-star. And I got out of a meeting one day, and I had 3 missed calls from him and 1 from his denominational leader. And I call him back, and he says, my wife's moved out. She's leaving me. So we meet early the next morning, and there was stuff that had been going on for a while that we knew about. And we start just talking about the different things that need to happen to care well for him, for her, for their 3 kids. And the denominational leader, as we start interacting, says, hey, we're just so you know, we're giving his last paycheck this month. So he's about 3 weeks to figure out what his next job is. And as we started talking, it's like, well, are there funds? And there, it wasn't a moral issue. And they said, you know, if things get back on track and they want to plant 2 years from now with us or a year, just and you think they're ready to plant, send them back our way. Because he's really a gifted guy. And I wish I could say these are rare stories, but they happen all the time. And we can't treat our planters like a commodity. They are a brother or sister in Christ that we're walking alongside as they plant this church. And so being able to see them and serve them, regardless of whether or not that plant is working out, is really important. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of times happens is because of where we're at in Phoenix and because we're working with so many different denominations or theological traditions, you get to then see what's really consistent across the board. And there are some things that I think because church planting tends to be like super entrepreneurial and the types of leaders that we're recruiting, and I put myself in this bucket, like our personalities tend to be very driven and fast-paced, that sometimes we take this like McDonald's approach to church planting. So we want to get as many hamburgers as fast as possible to as many people as possible. And the reality is we're just not in the fast food business. We're in God's family business. And families take time to grow. And there isn't just a cookie cutter model. And we've been given this sacred responsibility to come alongside God's people and help them flourish as missionaries. And so as we're thinking about building our network's capacity, one of the things I think we always have to keep in front of us is just that we are limited in our capacity. And so unless we're really taking the time to evaluate how, you know, can we add 10 more church plants to our regional part of our denomination? And we're prayerfully considering, are we ready to serve them? And we're actively then stretching to build our capacity to meet those planters, we're doing a disservice. Part of why that's super important is because our planters do not come to church planting. So we've maybe coached, I don't know how many, lots of planters. They're not coming with this real significant capacity to meet with Jesus. We all have relational capacity. So all of you can relate to coming home from a long day of work, having horrible things happen, being discouraged, dinner not going the way you wanted it to, bedtime routine taking extra long, and you get into your room at night with your spouse, and one of you is ready to connect and talk about your day, and the other is just dead and like wants to like disconnect and like scroll for your phone, right? Because you have relational capacity. And if you do that night after night, month after month, and you meet with someone else in the room for marriage counseling, they're going to tell you that part of what you have to do to have a healthy marriage is have capacity for your spouse. That if you're spending all your energy and showing up with no energy month after month, it will affect your relationship. Our planters are going a long time with very little bandwidth for Jesus. And it's one of the things that we've watched this now with probably 4 years of church planters cohorts and maybe 15 or so planters in each cohort. And then even years before that of just one-on-one and small group coaching, of realizing part of what we're doing is we're recruiting planters and giving them the resources and tools and training and sending them and getting them really excited about doing this hard thing that nobody else wants to do. Part of that whole pep talk, there's just this missing piece of this. We can't call people into this without really stopping to say, this hurried, busy, urgent life doesn't allow us to produce the types of churches that we really need to be producing. It's not going to produce health. There's a lot, and we talked about this in the session before, there's a lot of ego and pride wrapped up in so much of church planting. And I think a lot of that is honestly just coming from this deep need for significance, achievement, respect, to be well-liked, understood, seen, heard. Like all these things that we have been wrestling with as ministers for our whole ministry, our planters are also, but they aren't maybe aware of it. And it's actually, church planting might be feeding some of that addiction and need and hiding it for a while. And so we find these planters who can speak the gospel super articulately and clearly. They can build these core teams and churches, but they're not really experiencing the abundant life that Jesus has for them. And so when we create this space for our planters, and this is, I think, is a really important thing that we have to do, to really sit with what it means to be silent and to sit and commune with Jesus, to sit at the feet of Jesus, and to really allow your identity not to be wrapped up in church planting, in ministry, in being a pastor even. There really is a profound impact. And I think part of why we're seeing more, I don't know if we're seeing more plants, but we're seeing less catastrophes and less really significant things happen that have ripple effects. And I think part of that is just how deeply this is being tied to our walks with Jesus. At the end of the day, you know, as we are calling people into church planting, if there's not that encounter with Christ, you know, what really are we calling people to? If the planter that we're calling into our network isn't having that, how are they and what are they calling their people to? Just like we can make planters a commodity in our desire to plant more churches, well, how does that then get trickled out when they make people that they want in their congregation a commodity so that they have a crowd on Sunday mornings, right? These are the things that we don't want to see happen. And so, you know, Jesus is patient. He's not forceful. He's present and waiting for our planters. And one of the things that we really want to see happen in our city is we want our pastors to have this common hunger. So we've been talking a lot about, do we have a shared hunger? Are we famished for Jesus? Are we doing things that we can go days without our daily bread? And if so, how do we get to the heart of what that is? And that comes back to growing as being leaders who lead through confession and renewal in Christ. The second is, what is our capacity for people? And this is maybe a more practical one that I think we can slow down a little bit as we're training and coaching and assessing and resourcing planters, is to help them really pause and ask the question, what's my capacity? You know, a lot of planters want churches of, they have a number in their head, right? You very rarely hear someone say, I only want a church of this number. This is what I have capacity for. So often what's derailing church planters and denominations will pour tons of money, as you guys know, right? You're pouring a lot of money into church planting. And then really what derails it is honestly sometimes it's just extreme disorganization, these busied, hurried lives, and this overall cultural acceptance that being a busy leader means that you're a great leader. You've got... And I just think we have to be able to sit with our planters, and we've done this a lot, to say, You know, you, yeah, it's not an excuse to not care well for your team. That is a significant part of how you're going to be able to get a church plant up and going. So we know that we're not going to personally be able to care for every plant or planter. I mean, I'm in one city, and I don't personally know all my plants. Never mind those of you who are leading at a national level. But every one of us is overseeing and supervising and leading a team of people. And if there isn't real deep relational care for that team, and that team isn't healthy and thriving, then no matter how many layers down before you get to your church planter, we're passing along this message that we can somehow allow relationship to be a means to the end of mission. When the mission of God is Him unifying all of us together as one family in Christ, it is relationship. We have a church planter in a different city in Arizona who had grown, his church had grew maybe to about 200 people, and he started losing leaders left and right. And his elder board and elder and his oversight team was having all this dysfunction and conflict. And so we started sitting with them, listening, trying to understand what was going on. For a while, we thought maybe there was a morality issue or like some kind of deception that was happening. And really, as we just began peeling back layer by layer by layer, he was just an administrative nightmare, like had not an administrative bone in his body. And we could have paid a full-time administrator to help him, and he would have had no capacity to know how to use them, like none. And so this planter was like growing this church, and then all of a sudden conflict crashed, you know, and you see this thing that's now a couple years in beginning to fall apart. And it was amazing to begin to see these other pastors and other planters within the network step in. One paid for leadership coaching. One got him a consultant. Others like really sat. He had like 9,000 emails. Like we had some of us go through and like clear it all out and like get him started back over. Like just to see these other churches come around him. And over 6 to 7 months, him learn how to use an assistant. And like their church is about 250. It's self-funding. We're years down the road. They're doing really neat things and they're part of town. And, you know, and it's just that there's these things sometimes that derail our planters. And when we're looking wide and we don't think about how we can go deep to really care holistically, we can see plants that should really be able to make it through, not make it through. And so that network becomes really important. All right, number two. I'm so administratively gifted, I can't use a clicker. All right. So for us, place really matters. And I know this is going to be different for you who are leading from a denominational level. But even if you are leading nationally and you're recruiting planters nationally, try your best to somehow hand them off to a local leader. We have had so many churches come into downtown Phoenix in the last 10 years and not make it. We had a church website from somewhere, I think it was South Carolina, their promo to their their recruiting for their church plant was, give us money, gentrification is happening rapidly in downtown Phoenix, now's the time to invest, right? Well, no one in downtown Phoenix was happy at that point that gentrification was happening. Like, not even, like, the cool hip artists or the coffee shop owners. And so just so quickly, you know, within days of the website being on, he was connected to us. We talked to him. He took it down. He came to Phoenix. He was welcomed by a whole bunch of people. But the reality is every city and every region or every part of the country has such a unique context. And especially right now with how church planting is getting more difficult as we go on, if you're not connecting them to a local leader, the failure rates are a lot higher. I'm sure there's research on that. You can hit up Daniel on it. But I love when we have some Anglican bishops and some Assemblies of God churches, and there's probably five different, you know, Presbyterian, just five different denominations that when they have a planter that might be interested in Phoenix, they just connect them directly to us. And I think we're able to help and serve them and have much greater impact. And so as you're thinking and recruiting planters, know that your denomination, especially if you're at a national level, will be strengthened by connecting them to a local leader. Similarly, it actually becomes a gift to that region or that community or that city or that neighborhood, because the collective witness of the body of Christ in the area is evangelistic. So when a neighborhood sees an Anglican and a Pentecostal and a Baptist church working together, they're like, what is this, right? We have a church, we have an area in town, North Phoenix, that has 8 or 9 churches working together, and they have no Reformed churches up there. And they went up to the East Valley that had all this Reformed church planting happening, and they took some people who were praying about church planting, and they said, hey, come to North Phoenix, let us take you on a drive and show you where we're praying for a church plant, and we don't have a Reformed church in our ecosystem, we want one of you to come plant. And the Reformed guys are like, you know who never recruits people from other denominations? Us. So they were like, you know, making fun of themselves. It was just this huge gift to say, where do you have a church with a totally different theological tradition saying, hey, we don't have any church like your church family here. Come plant up here. So that collective witness, people come to faith. I've seen it happen, and it's important. It also builds synergy. So if you're going to plant 10 churches this year as a network, if you even just say, we're going to intentionally pick one part of the country that we're going to plant 3 of them, and we're going to ask them to intentionally include to start networking and invite people from other denominations, you'll see their ability to reproduce be faster than the random people that scatter. It just will. And so I really encourage, even if you're at a national level, to think about how do you build that into what you're doing. It's made a huge difference for our denominational leaders locally. And then lastly, we have to go to the margins. And a lot of the church planting resources, if you think about, so, all right, let me back up, try to think of an example. So right now, if I, you know, come to Nashville from Phoenix, I could go to an Olive Garden, I could go to a Cracker Barrel or whatever, and there's just certain restaurants, no matter what city we go to, they're there. And a lot of our church planting resources is the collective sourcing of all of our nation's thoughts and ideas, and they're good things. They're helpful. Use them. But when a person is opening a restaurant in downtown Phoenix, they spend a year going to the food trucks in the different neighborhoods in Phoenix, and they're looking at who's literally selling food out of their trunk of their truck and what's new. And when you're looking at trying to create something new and to break into a different part of the market, you go to those food trucks. And a lot of times, because our church planting models have neglected the margins so much, when we then take what's working nationally and we try to overlay it onto church planters who want to be in the margins, it just doesn't work. There's a church planter, a friend of mine, Enrique, is planting in East LA, and he's talked about how he got all this funding to go to multiple different training events, and he would go, and he'd get ramped up and excited, and he'd sit with, you know, 50 other church planters and meet all these other guys, and they were all going to plant in middle class to develop, you know, middle class neighborhoods, but he was planting in East LA in the hood. And he just said, year after year, he just kept growing in more and more shame of how here he is, 4 years in, he's got 50 people in his church, and these conferences are talking about having 200 people, 500 people. So we were talking through praying. At some point, he says, you know, I realized all this time I've been trying to put on Saul's armor, and I just want to be David. And what's amazing is if you walk around his neighborhood in East LA, they're meeting at a Boys and Girls Club. The school, the Boys and Girls Club, the local restaurant owners, they all know him. He is that community's pastor. So he might have 50 people on a Sunday morning, but if there's a death in the neighborhood, if something happens, Enrique is called, and he's a prayer warrior. And so what I've watched is as these other churches in LA who aren't focused on this neighborhood have begun to learn from Enrique, they have been gifted with this passion for prayer and evangelism in a way that only Enrique could give them. Similarly, he needs resources. He's not going to be a fully self-sustaining church. Maybe he could be bivocational. There's ways to go about it, but they need each other, and it's a reciprocal relationship. And so when you're thinking about planting and you prioritize place, there's really unique and creative things you could do. Like for every 2 plants you plant in Phoenix, please send people my way, you could pick, 2 planters that are going to be more in low-income communities and think about maybe we don't even have any experience knowing how to fund and support these planters, but who does? And I'm sure there's people in this room who have experience who could help you spend that money well. And how do we then say, let's make this part of our vision, because it really strengthens the whole. We need the Davids to lead us to the heart of God. We need prayer and worship to be pushing us into these new frontiers of church planting. And that's going to be found in the food trucks. And then I won't spend a lot of time on this one because it's a different conversation. But for us, church planting and training and equipping the laity for mission are integrated. It is one conversation. So our church planter training, our seminary training, we are constantly coming back to our pastors that they are not. They actually aren't doing the hardest thing that no one else has the guts to do. We don't keep saying that over and over again, that their people have been called into the front lines of mission in our city, that where there is pain in our city, we want our people to be. And so how are we helping? How is the pastoral vocation positioning itself to be equippers, releasers? Because that's been a huge part of our focus, and those two strategies have been wed together for 10 years, we're seeing all kinds of things happen. So we had an Assemblies of God pastor who went over to a PCA church who then planted with church members from 3 different congregations, and the core team is this collaborative effort of 3 different churches, very different theological traditions. They've got a couple interesting years ahead of them in gelling. You can pray for them. But it's been beautiful. Phoenix Children's Hospital, we found out by happenstance, has probably 25 different employees of all levels from 10 of our churches that all work there. And so what happens when you take those 10 churches and those all those different people and you begin talking about church planting with them at Phoenix Children's Hospital? Like, what kind of things can happen? So these are things that we are beginning to see the fruit of. We say it's like early spring. Like, you can see the early buds of fruit on the tree, and we're excited about and we're experimenting with. I'll update you in 5 years, I hope. And then lastly, and then we can go to questions, or actually not lastly, second to last, then we'll go to questions. Really this picture of maintaining a kingdom perspective. So kind of going back to that McDonald's analogy is, if I only care about feeding my kid as fast as possible, as quick as possible, for as cheap as possible, then a Happy Meal makes sense. But if I am thinking, my 9-year-old is 59, what do I want his heart to look like? Then I'm not going to give him Happy Meals for lunch and dinner every day until he's 18, right? We keep planting churches thinking about the now, not thinking about how we are either contributing to healthy soil or hardened soil 50 years out. Part of why we're seeing the shift culturally in our country and the resistance to Christianity isn't just because of secularism coming in. It is because of the unfaithful witness of God's people. There's ways that we have contributed to hardening the soil. And so we have to be able to have this posture, I think, of just reliance on the Spirit, knowing that there is going to be, that when we think about Judgment Day and in Scripture, when it talks about God saying, depart from me, I never knew you. That we can convene crowds of people who might get to stand before God and have actually always been worshiping the God of self, or the God of comfort, or the God of safety, or the God of the nation, and didn't actually meet Jesus. And so we have to really, I think we're in this season where we have to think really intentionally about what it means to not simply plant churches, but really think about the family of God and giving God's people and this world an encounter with Christ. I had, because there's so many different denominations, I really am, it's like my husband thinks it's nerdy of me, but I really am fascinated by all the different church governance structures and whatnot. This summer, there was three different denominational gatherings from as different, like national gatherings. You know, you guys do those like national convenings and conventions. They were as theologically polar opposite of each other as possible. Three different ones, and these different pastors were saying, hey, this big issue is being discussed. Make sure you like live stream at 2 a.m. for this one or whatever. So I did. I watched three different ones, and you know, the pastors are texting me, and I'm like, oh, how's the vote going to go? And what struck me was how similar all of them were. You had the like missions, church planters, networkers all hanging out in the hallway, catching up with each other. You had the like, you know, the teachers and the people who are like really gifted at making sure we're like holding on to our tradition inside, arguing till 2 a.m. And I just think that if we're gonna really see a move right now of church planting, we've got to find ways as denominations to bless and release the evangelistic, apostolic, prophetic leaders. Keep them tethered, right? Like that. Those roots really matter. So we want our pastors to be the best Baptists or Anglicans or Presbyterians or Pentecostals that in their denomination. So that anchor matters, but let's also try to give them some freedom to go figure out what the theological controversies are going to be 10 years from now. And how do we, you know, have that space together? So, and then last, I'll just say is pray. That's just become a huge part of what we're longing for in Phoenix. Our pastors that started the network, our churches, it's not a strength of ours. The Lord has been kind to add some Pentecostals to our group, which has helped. But really, what's actually made a difference is in the last 3 years, we have begun something called the Daniel Initiative. And it is a network gathering of all of our international pastors in Phoenix. And we said, you are a gift to our city. God has sent you here for the strengthening of our witness to Jesus. We need you. They had a lot of these pastors said, no, we've never thought of ourselves as being needed here. And we have Burmese pastors and pastors from all over the nation, all over the world, living in our city, who every month go to these mountains and pray for the city, pray for our churches, and are really just having this phenomenal impact and I think strengthening the whole of our movement. And so I just think if we want to increase our capacity, like I know that's like the thing you're supposed to say, but I attribute a lot of our growth this last couple years and just the humbling and the depth that we're seeing to these pastors who are more recently committed to praying for the Lord to increase workers. All right.
Thank you, Danae. I'm going to have facilitate a couple of questions here before we jump into. So if you've got questions, you put your hand up and Daniel and Scott can run mics to you. But thank you for sharing and just the whole backstory of what Surge is has been tremendous. Can you talk about Surge School and then also maybe MTC, Missional Training Center, and how you're connected and how you're training women and men for ministry, because I think you've run hundreds of people through your school.
Yeah. So Surge School is a leadership development training that our local churches run, but then we convene to kind of put it the curriculum together. So we think it's the local church's job to train and develop leaders for mission. So we every year the church will invite their top 10 to 15 leaders to go through this 9-month training program, and it really just gives them a picture of the gospel story. where do they live in this story, and what does it mean to participate in God's mission through their words. So they have all these rhythms that they develop, so they're proclaiming, talking about Jesus, listening to the word, but also blessing their neighbors has been a really big thing in Phoenix. We've got a lot of tensions, I think every city does, but Phoenix is in the news regularly for it, and so we've been trying to find ways to help equip our church members to cross boundaries and to meet people they wouldn't normally meet. So every week they have to have a meal with someone not like them and listen. And so we've done that for 10 years. We've had thousands of people go through this process, and that's why we're beginning to see some of these organic things spring up as we have leaders who we say this, it's become our leadership development training for all of our churches, for our core churches. And then the seminary was really out of that. It's a four-year Master's of Arts degree in missional theology, but really it's Michael Goheen moved to Phoenix, and it's mainly for vocational ministers to be able to be equipped to do ministry.
So with Surge, it's open to anyone. You don't have to be on track to become a pastor.
Yep.
And you're teaching missional kind of values really early on.
Yeah.
And that could be at any level of church leadership.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of our core team, it works best, a lot of our church plants use it in their core team phase, because then it moves it from the planter planting to the whole 20 or 15 or however many are in the core team all take on this sense of we're planting this church.
So in a sense, I mean, you may not use this language, but I mean, you're creating a pool and a potential pipeline for future missional leaders in your city. So with MTC Missional Training Center, I'm just curious, how did you score Michael Goheen? I mean, that's a
prayer.
That's huge, right? Yeah.
I know. He came to Phoenix, and actually this has happened a few times now where he said, I've not seen people working together cross-denominationally. Maybe I'll come a couple times a year, and then he moved, and then he bought a house and moved down here.
Yeah.
So, and we've had a couple church planters too who visit a bunch of cities and say, you know what, this is a city that we have there's a lot of collaboration happening. And so I think planters more and more are longing for to not be alone when they enter into a new place.
Yeah, that's great. Great. So let's hear from you. Questions about Surge and the work that you're seeing that Danae just explained. One right over here.
I'd love to hear a little bit more about the focus of your Surge school, like in the 9 months. What do you cover over those 9 months?
Yeah, so it's four different quarters. So quarter one we call Gospel Story. So a lot of our church members, whether they came to faith as adults or grew up in the church, tend to think of God's story as starting with sin. So we back up and say, what about creation? And that's part of what God did. So there's good in creation. Then there's sin. And then why that matters, we get to the cross and to the new heavens and new earth, and we say we're living in between the cross and the new heavens and new earth. And so we want to give them a framework to, one, think about their role in their work, in their homes, in their neighborhood, is to be a foretaste of God's kingdom to come. And then we go through a lot of practices to help them do that. So it's really big. It's like God's story. And then quarter two is really personal, your own heart idols, and how do you understand that you're living, that we're constantly being inundated with the story of consumerism or individualism, and how do we think about that in terms of shaping our life. Quarter three is mission. Like, how do you think about, we read a book by Jim Mullins called The Symphony of Mission. So how do you think about all these things playing together? So evangelism with words, justice and mercy, vocation, how do all these things kind of tie together to create the symphony of God's mission in our city? And the fourth one is very specific, their vocational calling, giving them 9 weeks to explore their own vocation and how do they live out their calling through their work.
Danae, with the different denominations that compose the churches that are part of your network, is there any hesitation when a church wants to join from the denominational leaders? How do you work with the leaders when they want to be a part of a network that's not necessarily the denomination itself?
Yeah, we haven't had tension from the denominational leaders. We always have tension. So there is, we'll joke about the Surge Reader, is that there is an article that these groups like are like, oh, if the, only the article wasn't in there. And then that very article, this group would say, if the article wasn't in there, we wouldn't be part of it. And then vice versa. So it is just this, and when we invite our church members into it, we say this is a collective thing put together by a lot of different denominations and traditions. Our people don't seem to nearly have as much concern about it as our church leader. And then we say it's the church leader's job to guide their people through it. But no, we haven't had too much. There's been, you know, when we've had denominations planter, we've had some planters meet in our training environments and want to plant together. And that seemed to be really hard for denominational leaders to figure out, well, can I still use my church, this bucket of money that I was going to give? And that's gotten a little tricky administratively. Sometimes the denominational leaders don't know how do we count. And that's even within a denomination. Like, I've seen that within, like, a denomination, but there's, like, two different, you know, there's, even, you know, even within your denominations, you've got your, like, different bishops or districts or whatever, however you organize. So it seems like that can become a barrier at times.
Yeah, absolutely. Questions? A couple over here.
You mentioned laity, and I really appreciate your thoughts on that. Could you elaborate a little bit more about your perception with engaging laity for church planting capacity and church planting movement?
Yeah, I think that it's just such a big part of the discipleship process is of our church planters is them shifting from thinking about getting people to come to a building on Sunday mornings. Because that tent, what we've seen with that is transfer growth. It doesn't really necessarily mean it's not necessarily kingdom growth, right? And so part of that process is really helping them think of it's not like they're the minister and here's 100 people to take care of. But they're a part of stewarding this family of 100 people that all have an active role, not just in, like, running your nursery. Well, we need nurseries, right? There's family chores we all have to get done. But, like, that Sunday, that the collective gathering is really to equip and release. So that's been a big, from the beginning, the name Surge comes from the Jesus Storybook Bible in Acts when it says the disciples surged into the streets to tell the good news. Like, that picture of our Sunday morning doors opening and God's people flooding our city. And so that's where the laity is like the tip of our spear. But it's hard actually to get pastors to like stay, I think we want to stay focused on that, but so many other things can become the main thing. So it's really been trying to help pastors even identify non-pastors in their congregation to equip as leaders. One of the gifts of being trans-denominational is we've learned a lot from one of our Anglican churches is there an Anglican in here? Any Anglican? All right, what do you call the warden of the laity? Senior warden, right? So we've loved, this is like a lot of our churches have adopted, we don't call it that because I'm not sure what that, it sounds like a jail term, but they have a role in the Anglican church of the head laity, the head lay guy. Our lady, and we love that. So a lot of our churches have begun thinking about who's like really speaking for the laity. I know other traditions do that as well, but that's been a really helpful gift for us.
When you work interdenominationally and the planter starts to feel a pull maybe more to the Surge network than your actual, you know, maybe sending organization, how do you work through the tension of that with them? Going, but well, this feels so much more relational, and I feel accepted here, and I just feel like I'm part of the system.
Yeah.
How do you manage that tension?
So we had that for a short season where we initially started all part of one church planting network, and then we grew to about 30 churches, and the growth began to be a barrier. People said, well, I don't want to be aligned with that national group, but I really like you guys, and we don't theologically align with this group, but we feel a lot of affinity for you. So at that point, 6 years ago, the decision was made, let's drop the national group and fund that 1% that you give, decided to fund a Surge. But we still had an Assemblies of God and a PCA, and we still had some people who had denominational ties. And we said, when we prayed for a year, should this be our new affinity group? And what we came away with was, no, actually, if what we can do is help fuel and foster excitement to be the church planting missional people in your own tradition, but in this city, we can actually influence and serve much broader. So at this point, our church plant, when we gather our church planters from, I mean, all different denominations, there is a celebration of what they can name. Here's the gift that my tradition offers to this table. And it's a practice we've developed. Like, what does that the Anglican Church gift to us in our church plant that we would not naturally think of? What does the Kojic Church gift? And we'll take time to really celebrate that. And it's really helped. So this last 3 years, there has been nothing but actually people in our seminary who want to be in a denomination. So this has been the new thing, is like when we all planted 15 years, 10 years ago, it was a lot of independent, go do it. We're having lots of our seminary students saying, hey, I just connected one of our planters to, or did I connect him to you? I don't know. Maybe I can't get credit for that. But someone connected to the ECC, because as we're getting to know, as we know, this pastor really wants to be part of a denomination, but he's as tied into Surge. He's one of our key leaders. So it's become this really mutual blessing.
That's good. Any other questions? One last question before we move to a short break. So I know Surge is regional. It's Phoenix-based. But you're also working with City to City on a national North American level. And so what prompted the need for that relationship? And then how is that relationship matriculating down to the regional level?
Yeah, so 4 or 5 years ago, we started having different city networks show up that came to learn from us, and then we would go to learn from them. So one being in Chicago, just beginning to see a similar theme, right? When God does something, he never does it on its own. It's happening all over the world. Surge is not unique. These things are happening globally, right? The Lord is bringing together these different denominations and traditions for the sake of mission. And so City to City became, I think, just a natural way to connect, and we were getting invited to a table. So they convened a group of North American leaders and invited like 10 of us to come, and we were all representing a different city. And they just said, hey, would you guys, if we start a City to North America, what should it look like? And we said, well, let's just make it a table that our cities pull up a chair to and learn from one another and serve each other and resource each other. So that's become the this last 2 years. Myself and a guy in Chicago and a leader in Miami are like the co-directors of North America. But really, it's our city networks are trying to learn from each other. And there's lots and lots of cities that are convening a focused mission across denominational lines. I would say the other big piece that became important with City to City was saying, we're trying to figure out in Phoenix how to, like, we can convene denominations across broadly, but there is huge historic racial divisions denominationally, mm-hmm. and we were trying to figure out, we've been pressing into it, praying into it, trying our best, and so that became another piece of saying, who out there is also trying to, like, really press in and cross these racial barriers in their cities and the church. And so it became an affinity, like just a way of connecting with other leaders who are also trying to do that.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I know for most of us who work denominationally, sometimes it's, you know, in my denomination, we have that, I wouldn't say it's animosity, but there's a sense in which we don't want to lose a church to a network. But I think what I'm seeing with Surge and other networks, and even New Thing, networks are getting better at actually coming back and matriculating help back into the denominations and helping that local church receive the local support that it needs. And so I think it's really key, some of the things that you're doing. So thank you so much for being here. So Denise is also going to be here. If you have more questions later during dinner, you can have some time with her. Thanks again. So we're going to move into a really quick break. We're just going to change the stage around so we can have our panel come up. So we're going to give you maybe a five to 6 minute stretch break, refresh your coffee. We're going to come back here, hard start at 4:45. We're going to talk about residencies, planter care, planter development with two different networks and two different churches that are doing that. So come back 4:45 and we'll get started here real shortly.